the Diamond Discussions Podcast.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Diamond Discussion Podcast alongside my co-host Joe Stumpo. I'm Mike Caliendo. We are getting down to the wire here. We got a few series left. Both of our teams are, as of now, in the playoff picture. You guys are obviously in a little bit of better shape. But before we do all that, Joe, as usual, we didn't forget. We have our trivia. So remind everybody what the question was, because it was a little bit of time ago. And let's give them the answer and see how wrong everybody was.
Yeah, so I hope everybody's doing good. So the question for two weeks ago, was what players have homered at the age of 18 and the age of 40? We actually asked for only three of the four, but we're going to give the full four just so you have this in your memory bank that you could use on somebody else in case you want to ask somebody a pretty good trivia question. So again, what players homered at age 18 and 40? It was Ty Cobb, Rusty Staub, Gary Sheffield, and Alex Rodriguez. So a couple people answered. They got two right. They didn't get the third right. A couple people thought Griffey was in there, which is a very viable answer. I would have went Griffey too. But no, these are the four. So, and we have a pretty good one for the end of the episode too. I like this question that we're going to have later on. So,
God, you guys are going to hate us so much.
I know.
Interestingly enough, when my dad heard this question, he actually got the harder ones. He got Cobb and Staub, which I find that.
Of course he did. Of course he did.
So, and he looks at me and he goes, he almost like remembered the broadcast when Rusty Staub did it and they brought up Ty Cobb. And I'm just like, wow, this is where I get it from. Like,
there you go.
It was incredible. So I thought that was fun. He was very frustrated when I gave him A-Rod and Sheffield. He obviously felt he should knew it. He was actually at Sheffield's, you know, because he played with the Mets at the end of his career. Actually hit his 500th. My father was there for that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he actually got the ticket signed from Sheffield, like a ticket stub.
That's awesome.
For our younger audience members, ticket stubs. Yeah, that was a thing back in our time.
Yeah, that's national pastime for real.
Yeah.
But could you believe there's only nine games left?
No.
It was a really long season, though, I'll say. It just felt like they were the dog days, and they were like long dog days.
I feel like there was a lot, like there were stretches and it was just dog days, mediocre, decent, dog days again, all-star break, kind of good, you suck, dog days, here we are. Like, I don't know. I mean, that's really what it feels like.
I mean, where are you right now? I gotta ask. I mean, is frustration setting in? Is nerves setting in as each game passes? I mean, you know, if you guys don't make the playoffs, it's almost like you would have the right to burn the city down if you wanted to. I mean, I don't even know what to say at this point because it would be absolutely unacceptable. So I'm just trying to see where you would fit in this.
All right, so here's the God's honest truth. You and I got together. We watched the Canelo Alvarez fight, and
we did a lot of
talking prior. We did a lot of prep for the episode. Everything. We went to record. We had an issue. And then by the time it was at that point, it was too late because then the Canelo fight was getting ready to start and we didn't want to miss anything.
Yep.
When we went to record that, I was furious. Like fire was ready to come out of me. Now, not so much. I've calmed down a little bit.
Cause they took two out of three from San Diego.
Yeah. Cause you know what? I almost had it the other way. I could have seen San Diego taking two out of three from them, and I'm kind of glad they, you know, proved me wrong. I'm happy about that. They played well in the series. Tong, you know, bounced back in a huge way today.
So he had eight strikeouts, no walks. That's a pretty good sign.
Yeah, and he only gave up one run, and it was a couple throwing. I think it was a wild pitch and a throwing error that I think Tatis got on with a single or a walk. No walks, actually, you said. So we got on with a single, and then they basically just gave him a free 180 feet. That was what I heard on the broadcast, so I figured I'd use that. But other than that, he looked good. He looked electric. He was spotting very well. I thought he hung a couple of curveballs, but it ended up not hurting him, surprisingly enough. I guess he just has so much movement. You know, I really like what I see from him, even though his, you know, going into the start, he had an 80 ERA. I mean, he got really roughed up in his last start. He gave up, what I think it was 7 runs in the first. He didn't get out of it, you know. So very good to see that he bounced back. This is going to be a stretch. You know, listen, nobody's out of the woods. You guys seem to – you haven't clinched yet, right, like a playoff berth?
No, we are – I believe the magic number is 5 now because Boston and Toronto lost again.
Okay. I mean, that's huge. That's huge. So
it looks we'll guaranteed the first wild card spot, best case scenario.
I would say more than likely. At this point, even with the Mets listening there, with the 2 games ahead, it could go either way. I mean, Cincinnati, of course, won, and we'll see how everything plays out the rest of the way. I mean, this is a huge series going into the weekend. You know, listen, the Mets got the Nationals. Nationals got nothing to prove other than being spoiler to their NL East rival. They're home. You would hope and imagine they just do what needs to be done, sweep this team, call it a day, set yourself up into the wild card position, and that's that. And, you know, after that, they're gonna face Chicago, the Cubs, on the road. That's, you know, a potential playoff matchup, maybe, you know, down the road, depending on what both teams do. And that's a huge test for them. And then they finish off with Miami. Again, it should be, realistically, I would say the odds are in their favor. The Cards, they control their destiny at this point. They have to win. They have to win, obviously, a lot more than they lose. I would hope for a sweep against Washington. It's almost necessary at this point just to maybe give yourself some breathing room. But I, you know what? This team is so – I don't even know if I have the words for it. It's just – you don't know what to expect. You know, some guys are having monster seasons. Soto with the start that he had. I mean, you know, we kept saying Soto will be fine. Not only has been fine, I mean, he put up a historical season. 40-30, first Met to ever do that. You know, it's really the pitching that let them down. Health issues, guys just, you know, completely losing it. Kodai Senga is in AAA. Never would have thought that. David Peterson has not had a strong second half. He's not looked like the all-star that he was. Holmes, I think, is starting to look a little tired. And their Minaya has not been good at all. They went with this kind of combination the other day that I thought was interesting to have Clay Holmes start and Minaya kind of, you know, come in at the end there. That was interesting. And listen, if it's going to work, which it did, you know what? Maybe that's a weapon that they're going to use in the playoffs. Maybe that's how they're going to do their thing. It's a very different look. I mean, now teams are going to basically be preparing for 2 starting pitchers in one day. So that's an interesting way to go. I don't know if they're going to do that with the young kids too. I mean, that could really – that whole dynamic, I mean, that's like an ultra opener. You know,
I actually think that that's going to be the future of baseball.
I mean, maybe.
I think it's going to be a 4-inning start because – the numbers and whatever, I'm not trying to get into, you know, the analytic thing of it, but
right.
If you look at guys that get into the 6th, it's rare now. So yeah. there's a lot of 5-inning starts in the game. And it's just where the game is headed right now. So what I see is you go 4 or 5 innings, and instead of going to your pen, you could go to maybe a hybrid starter type, you know, role, and he could finish out the game. We don't have to go to Elsley or you know, a Rogers or you know, Diaz. You give those guys days off, and you just have the second starter almost come and finish off the game. I think that's what's going to happen. I really think that's going to happen. I really think that's going to be the future of baseball. Honestly,
yeah, that's a crazy thought. And like you said, given the numbers and the analytics behind everything, that's not that like bizarre, but just like first hearing it, it almost kind of is.
Because imagine if you had two or three guys that you could do that with. Imagine if you came in, imagine you come in with Clay Holmes for four innings, which is kind of where you want Clay Holmes to be. The fifth on is where he starts.
He starts to lose it. He starts to lose a little bit.
So he'll just have
one really bad inning, and then he'll bounce back and maybe get to the fifth.
So let's say he gives you four scoreless, right? Or four innings, one run. That's a decent start. Then you bring in, you know, whoever.
Right.
That's just like, wow. That's interesting to me. I think it's really something that the game is going to see. I really do. I think you're going to see two or three guys that are going to be able to come in a mop-up role and have, it's almost like you said, it's two starters in one game.
Yeah.
And I think Ohtani is going to be one of those guys.
That could be a thing. The perfect
couple right now, Tyler Glasnow, a guy that you can't really stretch out as much. Maybe he goes five, and then you could imagine pitching Ohtani for four.
Yeah.
That's great.
But that's the other thing. I think Ohtani would have to be the starter for that, given the rules of
however you want to do it. Ohtani for four, five, and then Glasnow for four, Snell for four.
I don't mean to completely sidebar this at the moment, but the Dodgers have come out. They have said that Ohtani is apparently be willing to play the outfield in the playoffs.
All three outfield positions, yes.
Yeah. I think that's for one reason only, for him to pitch late in games. Because
probably.
For those that don't know, the way this rule is set up.
Yeah, you could defensive sub him.
Yeah, and if you want to call it the Ohtani rule. So Ohtani, like we've seen, you know, throughout his career, he starts a game, he comes out, he still hits. Now, if he were to be a reliever, let's say he was your closer, let's say he blows the save, the other team ties the game. Ohtani's obviously out of the game as a pitcher. Maybe he doesn't get out of the inning, whatever the case is.
Right.
Ohtani would then have to come out of the game as a hitter, unless he goes to another position. So I think that's realistically what it is. I think that's where they're headed and where their mindset is, that they're not going to have him necessarily open games. He's going to be more that back-end guy, and then they can slide him in the outfield. Plus, Michael Conforto has been awful for them, so it's really not all that outlandish. So like I said, for those that don't really know how that rule works, I know it's a little confusing, but yeah, that's what they're doing, and that's the defense mechanism, in my opinion. Completely sidebar this. I know, Mets, Ohtani. This is what we do. We're talking baseball. What is it? Back to what the Mets did though with Holmes and Manaea. If that's going to work, if it's going to get Manaea right, and it's going to keep Holmes from putting the pressure on. I mean, if you really look at Clay Holmes, I mean, this guy was a closer last year for you. He lost his role because he struggled to midseason. Lost his role as the closer, signs a free agent deal with the Mets, and is not just doing it to be a reliever for them and crossing the town here. He's also then transitions to a starter. Not only that, he pitches opening day in Houston. He was your opening day starter, a guy that was a closer last year. Hasn't started the game in 6-7 years, probably plus. Interesting enough, and the fact that the season that this kid has had, and I don't mean to use that term, but to me, he's, even though he's somewhat met expectations for the most part, I think he's exceeded them, because you really didn't know what you were going to get. I had high hopes that he was going to be, fairly serviceable, if not better than that. And he's shown that he's done that. Now, this is also a good sign for the future with him. Because you got him for two more years. They're going to have a plethora of issues because they have eight starters next season for five slots. So that's I would love to dive into that maybe later on in the episode. But the fact that Holmes is now, he's stretched out as a starter, it's only going to increase him and make him better for next season. But if this combination, because like I said, Manaea, it's not looked good since he's been back. If this combination, if that's what's going to work and that's going to win you games, by all means, handle business. I at this point, win at all costs, because I mean, isn't that the bottom line? Isn't that the end all be all? Win at all costs. Do what you got
to
do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Because, and here's the thing. Right now, I think you're slated, if the season ended tomorrow, you'd be playing the Dodgers.
Yeah. I think that's where it's going to end up regardless, unless somehow they have a catastrophic fallout.
The Dodgers bullpen right now is not good.
It hasn't
been great. So, and their starting pitching is beatable. They're not like, you know, you can give Yamamoto some trouble. I'm sure you could give Glasnow and Snell some trouble, and it's not something that's so far fetched. But the Mets are going to have to keep up with them offensively if that's the case, because I think the pitching is where you're gonna find your issues against the Dodgers. And honestly, if you play a team like Milwaukee or the Cubs, you're going to find other issues. Their speed on that team, they're a lot more patient, and they could score in bunches. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough ride, Mike, I think, honestly, navigating through the National League as a Met fan.
Well, realistically, I mean, you know, we said it to when we first started this podcast, you know, at the beginning of the offseason, and not the beginning of the offseason, it was kind of like midway through. Soto had already signed all that. We were getting, you know, gearing up for the season. We all knew the road to the World Series to get through the National League, the road was through L.A. If they got to play them early, it's going to be on the road. It's going to be in LA for three games if they make it that far. Listen, if you come out of that series on top, I think all momentum is in your favor. You know, you can't use that as your World Series for the year. I know it's the Dodgers and it is a huge accomplishment, but you know, you almost have to, you know, all right, we handled business here, now move on to the next. Like, that's why I think this Cup Series is very important on the road.
It is. It is.
You know, you're going to see what they got, because it's not like they're really resting. They're still fighting. They want to, you know, secure their position. They haven't yet. As far I know, they've clinched, but, you know, they're not officially the seeding aspect for them is unofficial. So
right.
they still have meaningful games, unless this weekend might determine that. I have to look at the standings again just to refresh, but
they would have to sweep. I think they would have to sweep in order to really like solidify it, I believe.
So, I mean, with that being said, you know, that's a huge series. I'm not trying to look past Washington, and I'm not just saying, all right, yeah, no, they got that. It's a sweep. No, it's going to be a battle. Like I said, Washington is going to be willing to play spoiler. You know, we've done it in the past. It's just how it goes. It's your NL East foe. It's unfortunate that we're not getting, you know, Mets Phillies or Mets Braves or anything like that, even though the Braves aren't in it. I don't really like how this new scheduling has really turned out, because, you know, I mean, at least it's not working out for us this year.
The seeding, yeah, it's rough. I mean
not even that. You want to see, like, games. Now, listen, do I really want to play the Phillies right now? We're fighting for a playoff. Even though, you know, they clinched, they got a huge lead. It is what it is, that the NL East is over and done with. But, I mean, could you imagine if this was a two-game thing and you're going into the final weekend and it's Mets-Phillies or Mets-Braves, whoever it was, and two games, you know, a two-game lead either side with three to play on the road or at home? I mean, that place would be a zoo. It would be incredible. Yeah. I mean, you'd get a playoff series right before the playoffs. It would be amazing. So I think that's, you know, MLB kind of dropped the ball there as far as their scheduling goes. But overall, I mean, look, schedule is somewhat in their favor. Like I said, they got Miami to close out. They got the Nationals, and they got the Cubs sandwiched in the middle. They have to take care of business. They have to take care of business. There's it's almost, you have to win at a bare minimum two out of three in every one of these series, and that should do it. A sweep anywhere would be nice. You absolutely cannot get swept, and you absolutely cannot lose two out of three of these series. That's
right.
A no-no, and you're putting yourself into, in my opinion, very bad
danger. Yeah, danger. Yeah, danger.
So I don't want to see that. You have to start this road trip off strong. Well, not road trip, because it's the Nationals, and they finish off you know, next week on the road. But they have to take care of business. You have to win every series. I could even take if they swept Washington, swept Florida, and lost two out of three to Chicago, I could live with that. I wouldn't be really necessarily thrilled because, again, like I said, that's a potential playoff opponent. And, right. You know, you want to beat everybody at this point. But I would live – I guess I could live with that. Realistically, you win seven. That should put you in. It should.
Yeah,
so,
I agree with that.
See how this plays out.
I personally think that the one team that you're going to struggle with is Miami.
They're always a pain in the ass.
Yep. I really think.
The OA collapse, Miami.
I'm not saying like you'll lose two out of three, you'll get swept. I'm just saying I could see them being three dogfight games at the end of the season. That's all I can
say. You know, and there's been years. I mean, even like I said, the OA collapse, the Tom Glavine game, that was against Florida.
Yep.
You know, even when they're bad, they seem to always be a thorn. For some way, yes. Like when the games count, they are a thorn.
And they're not horrible this year. They're actually a pretty decent team. They played some good baseball. Yeah, they played some good baseball, man. I'm not going to put it past Miami. They've played very good baseball.
They've been better than Washington, and we thought Washington was going to be like a little sneaky, pain-in-the-ass type team, and that turned out to be
absolutely
the Marlins, yep. You know? It's crazy that we're so laid back with the final week and a half of the series, the season coming, you know, the season coming to an end. You know, like I mentioned, the Yankees are in fairly good. They're in a fairly good spot. They haven't clinched it yet, but it would take a falling off a cliff twice for them to fall right. out of this at this point.
Right.
What is your biggest view going into the final few series? Now you have Baltimore, Chicago White Sox, and then Baltimore again, right? That's how you correct. Finish.
4-3-4, yeah. Four right now against Baltimore, then three, and then another three.
Another three or another four?
Oh, so, excuse me. It's 4-3-3, excuse me.
Okay. What's your expectation? What do you want? What do you want to see?
They got to win three out of four. I'd like to see three out of four out of this series now. They won earlier, so that's good. Yeah, they got to win three out of four. Then they have to do at least two out of three against the White Sox. At least two out of three.
You'd imagine.
And then two out of three again against Baltimore at the end of the season. That should wrap it up. That should solidify the one spot in the wild card. Now, the Yankees are three out of the division, so that's not fully dead yet.
Yeah.
But I'm not chalking it up to be something that's going to happen. That would be a catastrophic collapse for the Blue Jays. Literally, they were up five games Tuesday. So, you know, if that would have happened, that would be wild. But I do see us ending out as the one seed in wild card wise.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting because we could either play Houston, we could play Seattle. It's been flip-flopping because that's been a half a game lead in the division where Houston's been getting a win and Seattle's losing and then Seattle wins and Houston loses. So that's flip-flopping. So we don't know who we're going to be playing. It could be.
Who would you rather see if you had the choice?
Houston.
Really?
Absolutely.
Wow, I thought you were going to say Seattle.
Well, no, Seattle in a three-game set, you got to see Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, Luis Castillo, Brian Wu. You could have any one of those. It'd probably be Wu, Gilbert, and Kirby would probably be the three. And that's solid.
Out of the AL, is that the pitching staff that you kind of want to try to avoid?
Is that
the only pitching staff that scares you?
Yes, absolutely. Because they actually have five guys that could go in the playoffs. You don't have to pitch someone on 3 days rest. You have five viable starters in that rotation that could give you length. They could give you depth. Your bullpen is not overly taxed and used. They're scary. Seattle's scary in a long series. They're also scary in a short series because they have three guys that are really good. So I'd rather face Houston.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I mean, the other thing is, though, you're going to run into Cy Young candidate Hunter Brown. You know, that's absolutely a problem. Framber, he's shown signs of being complete dominant, and then he's shown signs of, Why is this guy on the mound? I know he had some controversy within the last few weeks. Kind of, you know, caught his catcher off guard and hit him in the chest because he was mad. It was in the Yankee series. And, he switched up on his catcher. He was mad about a call. The catcher was trying to tell him to step off. He refused. He threw the next pitch, gave up a nuke. He was upset. Listen, I get it. Giving up a bomb is not, you know, I get, but you don't do that to your catcher. And, you know, obviously that was denied and whatever, but hey, good thing for us is we have eyes. So there's that.
And his funniest not to cut you off, but his last eight starts have been brutal. Framber.
Yeah, he really hasn't.
Listen to this real quick. August 3rd against Boston, 5 earned. August 9th against the Yankees, 4 earned. August 15th, he gave him 3. That's not so bad. And 6 2/3 against Detroit, 7 earned through 5. Then Colorado. I mean, me and you could pitch against Colorado. You went 7 scoreless. Against the Yankees again, September 2nd, 5 innings, 6 earned.
Wow.
Texas, he gave up 3 earned. And just the other day against Atlanta, 4 innings pitched, 5 earned. His ERA has ballooned from 2.64 to 3.60.
Oof. Going into a contract year, that's not a good look.
And going into the postseason, that's not looking good either.
No, but I mean, listen, he's a guy. He's a gamer. He always seems to, you know, step up big when needed most. As far as I could remember, maybe I'm missing a start that slipped my mind.
The Yankees have seen Framber
a lot more.
So what worries me more is Seattle, because we haven't seen those guys as much, and the amount of guys that they could throw at you in a short series and a 7-game series is kind of devastating. So
yeah,
I'm more worried about Seattle, honestly, than anyone.
Me with Seattle, if I'm being honest. I was at the McLean debut. I was there. He pitched against Brian Wu, and he was a guy that I did want to see pitch live. Obviously, that whole rotation. I mean, I've seen Luis Castillo a couple times when, you know, back when he was with Cincinnati, things like that. But Wu was definitely a guy I wanted to see pitch live, and I'm, you know, glad I did. It really wasn't awful. He looked good. When he's on, he's very dangerous. Very dangerous. I can understand your notion. You really don't want to see Seattle really at all. If you could avoid them, I get it. Their pitching staff is lethal. And obviously what they did at the trade deadline, their offense is there. You got what I'm going to call is the runner-up MVP in Cal Raleigh in their lineup, along with Suarez. They made that move. Josh Naylor. You got a Rosarena in that mix. Who always seems to find himself in the middle of a big moment. J-Rod is a huge second-half player. So, you know, their offense is nothing to sneeze at. Jorge Polanco's had a resurgence for the most part. He's had a really good season.
Yep.
You know, their lineup is nothing to sneeze at. They could be out of the American League that you're going to see. They could be more on the side of being the most complete team with the talent they have on both sides of the ball. So I do understand avoiding them now. I just, you know, figured with that all that extra history between the Yankees and the Astros, I figured, maybe I don't want to see the Astros because they always seem to find a way to, you know, kind of break the hearts of New Yorkers. But
bring it on.
Yeah, listen, I mean, listen, I get that notion. I felt the same way, not to go down a rabbit hole, but I felt the same way in 2015, you know, when the Mets made their run into the World Series and, you know, we had swept Chicago. So we were sitting there waiting and it was either Casey or Toronto. And, you know, everyone was like, oh, what do you want to see? And the consensus was everyone wanted to see Toronto because they felt that they were the easier team to beat. My thing was I wanted Kansas City, and that was very foolish of me because look how that played out. But I felt like I wanted to beat the best team available. I wanted to beat everybody. I didn't care. You know, bring on the best talent. You know, it is what it is. And, it played out the way it did. Maybe I should have been on board with everybody else and rooting for Toronto, but – things happen. It's baseball. But like I said, I get that notion. So, you know, bring on the stiffest competition. Let's go. Let's battle. So I do love that aspect. What would be for you, obviously, if the status quo stays where it is, you know, because I was actually looking at Toronto's schedule. It's not that outlandish, especially with the strength of the Yankee schedule finishing out. It's not that outlandish that you guys come in here and steal the division at the last second. So, I mean, they have Kansas City. They've been playing a lot better lately. I know Boston has kind of been on the somewhat of a downward slope ever since pretty much Roman Anthony got hurt. But they get KC, they get Boston, and then they finish out with Tampa. They just lost to they just split a four-game series with Tampa. So that who knows the way that can go. Boston might wake up by that point. You know, it is what it is. And like I said, Kansas City has been playing well. It's not that much out of the realm of possibility you guys really could sneak this win, sneak this division here. I'm not ruling that out. But let's say, just for the sake of the argument, status quo remains the same. You get the matchup you want. You see Houston. Outside of the obvious, maybe Aaron Judge actually hitting in the playoffs. I'm not trying to throw shade. It's just, let's be realistic.
Well, yeah, it's the truth. I get it. The last 3 years have been brutal.
Right. Aaron Judge actually does what he does and hits in the playoffs like he's supposed to. Max Fried does what Max Fried is expected to do. All the expected to the extent. What would be your X factor to this team? Like, what would be the thing that just, like, a guy that maybe steps up, you know, listen, just maybe just has a fantastic playoff and is doing more than expected. What would be your X factor?
Somebody out of the bullpen. I want somebody to step up out of the bullpen and get some key outs, because that's been a problem the last month and a half. It used to be a strength. That was never an issue going into the playoffs. The ERA since the All-Star break, since the trade deadline, is over 5. So it's been a rough stretch. There's been bright spots and there's been some bad spots. Luke Weaver's looked good, then he doesn't look good. Devin Williams, obviously, he could give up 5 runs in the blink of an eye, or he strikes out the side and he looks like he's, you know, born again. It's a little inconsistency, but to me, it's going to be not someone on the offensive side of the ball. I know that's what you're probably expecting, but it's honestly someone from the bullpen, maybe a Mark Leiter Jr., you know, getting some solid outs. Somebody has to step up and be able to show Boone that he could go to them in a big spot and get outs. Because we obviously know there's got to be some sort of bridge to Bednar. We're going to need Devin Williams. All these Yankee fans saying don't pitch him in the playoffs, it's impossible. We're going to need all arms on deck. Everyone's going to have to make contributions, and everyone's going to have to be able to pitch out of that pen. Especially if your starter gives you 5 one night because he just didn't have it, or his pitch count is high, or that's just the way the game is going. So they're going to have to pitch.
Or even just a tight game.
Right, a tight game. Mm-hmm. And you know, what are we supposed to do? Ignore guys in the pen and overuse other guys? No, you can't do that. So
absolutely
Devin Williams is going to pitch. And Devin Williams has to be able to prove that he can get some big outs. Luke Weaver is going to have to maintain his composure and get some big outs. Mark Leiter Jr. is going to have to work on his breaking stuff, be able to induce ground balls, and get some big outs. Someone has to step up out of this pen. I expect a good postseason from Cody Bellinger. I expect, hopefully, Stanton obviously goes into beast mode as he normally does. There's other guys other than Judge that are going to have to step up on this team. And that's
fair.
And that's how it's going to work.
I'll be honest with you. I honestly love that answer. It's not what I was expecting. Not that I really didn't know what to expect, but I didn't think you were going to go bullpen, but I think that's phenomenal because, you know, obviously outside after the deadline, you guys got Bednar. He's had a couple of shaky outings, but other than that, he's been solid. So I can understand having another guy outside of your closer to be somewhat locked down and just, all right, that's the guy. Like, big moment, that's the guy. Go get an out. Go strike out the side. Go do something. Get the momentum back on our side. So I love that response. Listen, somebody's got to do something out of the guys you just mentioned, Devin Williams, Luke Weaver, Mark Leiter Jr. I don't really have the most faith in him, to be honest.
I don't, but someone's going to have to do something. He may be in there one day.
Of course he's going to be in there. He's going to be in there.
He's got to get us 3 outs. Yeah.
So. Yeah, he's going to be in there at some point. But
figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, I mean, Duvall, if he's going to be a part of that equation.
Oh, absolutely he is. Absolutely.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, he's a guy that, listen, just locate. That's it. Just locate.
Because Duvall has to locate. Yeah.
Yeah. That's his biggest problem. That he's not a bad pitcher. He doesn't have bad stuff. It's he has location problems.
Correct.
When he's locating that fastball, who's touching that? He's filled.
Right. He's throwing 99, 100, and his slider is 94. I mean, what are we talking about here?
It's filled. Absolute filled.
But yes, it's 100% the bullpen. They're going to have to be head over heels. Nearly perfect. I'm sorry. They're going to have to do really well in order for the Yankees to go far. I'm totally cool with the rotation. It's going to be Fried, Rodon, Hill, and Schlittler, most likely. I'm cool with that. I'm really cool with that. The bullpen is going to have to step up. That's all I'm saying. You may see a guy like Ryan Yarbrough have to make some big outs, you know, an additional lefty. Someone's going to have to step up. Because if you look at the offense, they are clicking. Right now,
they've been
clicking for a month. Their walks are up, their strikeouts are down. Jazz Chisholm has been playing out of his mind.
Yeah, he really has.
The Yankees are 13-4 when Jose Caballero starts at shortstop or third base or wherever he is. Whenever he's playing or starting, they're 13-4. So we got to figure something out on how to get him in the game more. And if that means no Anthony Volpe, then so be it.
He's been terrible. I mean, we've spoken about him how many different times on this show. And it's, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, be ill-willed towards the kid, but
neither am I.
He's been awful. And you know what, the Yankees, we're going to go down this hole again, but I mean, the Yankees did him a disservice. They failed him realistically, and he's been terrible. The funny thing is, before I forget it again, when we talked about that Framber incident, against you guys, when he sidelined his catcher, I saw a meme about this, and it was the concerning part isn't the fact that Framber showed up as catcher; it's that Anthony Volpe looked at a pitch right down the middle.
Oh my god!
You know, I thought that was awful, but
not to get into Volpe, but the fact that he's got 19 home runs and like 70 or 71 RBIs. It's kind of like, it's just unbelievable to me how he's got those numbers. And he's hitting 205. It's just mind-boggling to me. I'll never understand how we've gotten to this point. And now he can't play defense. It's that's the new thing, obviously. So, but yeah. Nothing to get into that. But all I'm trying to say is when Caballero's out there, we're better defensively. The team plays better. He's got 47 stolen bases. You know, he leads the league in stolen bases. When he gets on, he can go from first to third within a blink of an eye. So he's a weapon. And I think you're going to have to play the weapon right now, the hot weapon. So Boone's going to have a big decision to make when the end of the season comes and who does he want playing out
there? I don't think that's a big decision at all. One's been atrocious and one's been, like you said, one guy is literally leading the league in stolen bases. To me, that's not a decision. It's not even, I'm not even thinking about it. I'm genuinely not even thinking about it. Like I said earlier, any means necessary to win a game. If Anthony Volpe's feelings got to get hurt that he's not in the starting lineup, I think he should understand. And regardless of whose fault it is or whatever it is, him playing bad, whether he should have been sent down or not, that's besides the point. This is where we are.
He's hitting .260 as a Yankee with an .820 OPS. I mean,
he's been the silent, like, really good addition for you guys.
100%.
He was, what did I say in the trade deadline episode? Who was that, like, the Mets in 2015? Who would be that Juan Uribe, Kelly Johnson type of pickup? And that was yours, Caballero, and he was a perfect complement for your team. He opened up not that you guys aren't stealing bases, but, I mean, you traded for the stolen base leader in the American League.
Right.
So, I mean, that just... That's a huge pickup that people don't realize how awesome stolen bases are. I mean,
you know, no, and we have Trent Soto. So we,
Jesus. There's nothing. I mean, oh my God, I can't wait to see team he robs next season.
I do want to admit, and you were obviously the person I was telling this to. You kind of like, you were trying to get me back down to reality, but I was throwing out the notion that the Yankees could keep Trent Grisham and get rid of Spencer Jones.
You're out of your mind. I couldn't believe that you said that. I went.
But only if like it was involving Paul Skeens, and obviously Lombard would probably have to be added into a deal like that to get that done. But I think that was already floated around, and I don't think Cashman was cool with trading both. I think it was one or the other. So,
so you know what's messed up? I really want to yell at you right now because okay, and it's not for the reason you're gonna say. I'm gonna kind of shock you with my response here, right?
But Trent is 29. He's on the good side of his prime.
Screw Trent. It's not even about him, for multiple reasons, and I'll get to all that. So here's the thing. I would say, and call me crazy, Yankee fans listening, write me in the comments, send me some stuff, whatever. I would say that if you think trading Spencer Jones, George Lumbar, I would assume Cam, and maybe it would have to be a couple other pieces, but it would have to be pieces borderline their level to even...
Well, Ben Hess, something
to even have the ability to have the phone number to negotiate for a guy like Paul Skeens. And then I'm sitting here thinking about it. The Pirates are a low trash organization, and they would be stupid enough to do something like that.
But see,
so now, it's really not in that realm of the possibility. But that's where I want to yell, because I don't think Spencer Jones, Lumbar, Cam, and even a couple more pieces. I don't think it's enough. I don't think it's enough for the next four years of Skeens.
That would be enough.
I don't know. But that's now, the X factor to this question or this debate here. It is the Ben Pirates, Hess. And they would be stupid enough to take on not an idiotic trade, because they are getting value. But if you look at that trade and then you look around Major League Baseball at other teams, you're going to tell me the Dodgers can't beat that and would be willing to beat that deal? Of course
they would. Absolutely.
You're going to tell me the Mets wouldn't be able to beat that deal? Of course they would. You're going to tell
me. I don't know. Could the Mets do that now?
Yeah, the Mets could beat that deal if they want to. I'm not. I'm not for it.
But everybody's up already now.
So what?
So who's left down there?
That's nothing to do with that. Those are the pieces. Those are part of the pieces. As far as pitching goes.
What do you mean it's got nothing to do with it? Who's left in the farm system for the Mets to trade to Pittsburgh? You called
outside all of pitching?
You called the three best players up. You traded Drew Gilbert.
Yeah, Carson Bench is better than Drew Gilbert. But at least he's going to be on paper. We'll see how that plays out.
So, but how many guys could you pull? The Yankees have five guys that in their entire farm system that are really, really good. And those five, to me, would be able to work a deal.
The Mets, but like 3 or 4 weeks ago, were rated the best farm system in baseball.
The best?
Yeah, that's that. I read a report that they were labeled the best. I thought it was a little bit of a stretch, but
I thought it was the Dodgers that had the best farm system.
That's what I thought as well. I forgot who put it out there, but that was put out there. I'm not making that up.
If the Yankees traded Lombard, Spencer Jones, Ben Hess, and Cam Schlittler, that's enough, man. Ben Hess is throwing 102. Cam's looked really good. He's pitched against good teams as well.
I like Cam.
In the AL East, too. He's pitched against Boston. He's pitched against Toronto. He pitched against Seattle. He's pitched against teams that are going to be in the postseason. So,
but at that point, don't you think? I understand it now. It's getting Skeens. I understand that. But
that's a good thing. Those are top four guys right there.
And I just want to say this. I didn't think we'd be here, but leaning back, like where how I forget how far down you guys ranked are is your farm system.
We were 19th, I believe.
You're gonna tell me that you're completely gutted at that point.
We're gutted.
It's win or nothing. And now, how much play are you gonna have at the deadline? You know, things like that. Like
You don't need it at that point.
You're gonna tell me you're not gonna have to. You're gonna do nothing at a deadline.
You got Paul Skeens, Gerrit Cole, Max Fried, Carlos Rodon, Luis Hill. I mean, you're not looking for pitching. You may get a bullpen piece or something like that. I don't know. Or pick up like a guy like a Jose Caballero again. Your team is pretty much set. Your team is pretty much set at that point.
I wouldn't say that at all.
How could you say not? Did you not hear the rotation?
The rotation is disgusting.
And then if you bring back Bellinger, and maybe you add a couple of other pieces, that's going to cost money, which you have because you traded assets to get Skeens. It has nothing to do with money. So now you have money to go sign free agents. The Yankees would be scary, bro. I don't know what to
no,
tell
that,
you.
The rotation
alone, you could put us in the seventh and eighth spot.
Just for the sake of the argument, you re-sign Bellinger, Jazz is there, you got Bednar, all that good stuff, right? And then you said you're not going to have to do anything at the deadline. Well, guess what? Jazz just broke his leg, and Bellinger crashed in the wall, and he's got a concussion. They're both out for the rest of the season. Now what?
You figure it out.
You're going to have to make a trade. That's what you're going to have to do.
So you make a trade. Somebody else trades somebody.
At that point?
Somebody will trade somebody. No. It happens everywhere. You know that.
Yeah.
And like I said, low level guys. I didn't say big name guys. You trade, hopefully, if those injuries, God forbid, they don't happen. But if they were not serious, you bring in somebody that could, a journeyman, that can hold it down for a little bit till they come back.
No, they're after the season. You lost them. It's over.
Oh, you lost them. Oh, that's done. That's totally.
They're done. This happened in June.
Oh yeah, then you're forced to make a move that like that if your team loses a guy for the season in
June. I get it though. It is Paul Skeens. I understand that, but to me at that point, I think you at that point you're completely gutted. But I don't think this is going to happen. I genuinely don't.
I don't think so either. I think if it does happen, it's free agency.
Yeah, I think that's the way they're going to go. I don't know. The three of them, yeah. Skeens, and listen, I love Skeens. I do. I mean, this kid is...
It's the four of them. Imagine Skeens, Cole, Fried, and Rodon. And Hill. That's scary, bro.
No, it is. It is.
That's ridiculous. That automatically becomes the best rotation in the world. Forget baseball.
Yeah.
The world.
I agree.
The world.
We completely. This is. I think this episode is sidebar because that's what we're doing.
We're on our main point,
and we're going off the deep end with a lot of these crazy ideas and a lot of the. You know, we're talking mock trades with Paul Skeens. We're 9 games away from the season being over. I love it, but listen, this is those things where it's like, you know how like women say men like could literally just sit there and do nothing, or like, well, oh, you guys must be doing, you're up to no good. This and that.
Yeah.
No, this is what we do.
This is
exactly what we're doing right now. Like, yeah, all right, take the microphone, take the computer, take everything away. Like, this is what we do.
Yeah.
We name players from, see who can name the most players from 1997. And we come up with these crazy mock trades. And I'm going to argue with you, the team's going to be gutted if you trade both sides.
I don't care. You know what?
It's late September.
Listen, there's not too many guys I would do that for, but I would gut it for Paul.
No, of course. That's not a question.
I may make shirts. Got it for Paul.
I love it. That's pretty good.
I think I might have to.
That's pretty good. Hey guys, if you want a gutted for Paul shirt, we got you. Diamond Discussions. It may have to happen. I don't even know realistically, listeners out there, I don't even know what to ask you to comment on at this point. I guess this is a free for all.
Listen, just drop a comment, like hit the follow button. You know the deal.
You know the deal. Yeah, it is what it is. Listen, we're having fun. We're talking our favorite sport. Like you said earlier to start this episode, I really can't believe that we're here. I can't believe it's end. You know, mid to late September, our teams are in playoff runs. I'm still seeing posts about. Juan Soto leaving the Yankees. I'm still seeing that. There's just one group on Facebook. They always post like asinine stuff, and they're still talking about it. It's like, damn.
Well, I guess we're going back to opening day because that's when it was more relevant.
That would be nice. I would love to rewind and go back to opening day and relive some of it.
I don't.
A lot of dog days, though. They really were. I really feel like this was like
it was a long season.
I don't know. Yeah, it really was, and it's not over. And you know what? With the Mets and my frustration with them and everything, you know, like I called them.
Can I ask? Oh yeah, well, you did get called the Mets apologist. That's amazing.
Yeah.
But let me ask you a question that may sting a little, but it's something that I had a thought.
Okay.
Are you in any way a little disappointed that the Yankees' plan B looks a little bit better than the Mets' plan A?
No, because they're two totally different constructed teams, honestly. It wasn't that – how do I put this? It really wasn't the fact that, you know, it was an argument last season. if they both would have made the World Series, it would have been a crazy World Series. I would assume, and you would have the Yankees edging out the Mets, and I have the Mets edging out the Yankees.
I think that's just science. It was going seven. However,
I would I would say so. I could see that.
But I thought we had better starting pitching, and the bullpen was better last year than it was this year. So that's where I would have gave the edge. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, the Mets bullpen was a little shaky. Their starters, they were just gassed.
And we had Soto. You didn't have.
Yeah,
Soto,
we didn't. So. We didn't. Now we do. But I mean, if we're talking, what is it? How? Let me look at the records right now.
Yankees are, I believe the Yankees are 86 and 65. Let me just see.
85 and 67. All right.
85 and 67.
Yeah, we're talking about a 5-game difference. Cool. For a Mets starting rotation that completely imploded pretty much, just about. Not entirely, but
it's six. Don't short us. Thank you.
Oh, excuse me. I wasn't doing math real fast. Big deal. To say that the Mets are still in the position they are in with the issues they've had with starting pitching, with the issues they've had in the bullpen, the fact that they go and make a move for one of the more dominant closers in baseball in Ryan Helsley.
Oh, it's actually 86, so it's not updated.
Oh, it didn't update.
They had 85 going into tonight.
I got to look at that.
So it's a 7-game lead. Sorry.
Whatever. That's cute.
I'm just busting chops.
It's fine. Let me ask you this, though. What's that 7 games going to do if you play Houston and get swept?
Oh, nothing. Nothing.
And then we beat the Dodgers, and then we move on. What's it going to do? It means absolutely nothing.
Means jack squat.
Yeah, well, gots.
I know
that. But all fine and good. Like I said, with the issues they've had with the bullpen, with the outside of Diaz, I mean, they go and trade for the most dominant closer in baseball, and he did his best Craig Kimbrel from a few years ago when he was fantastic with Chicago and then goes to Chicago and was atrocious. Yeah, Cubs, White Sox. And he did that closer. I'm going to go over to Chicago. They had Liam Hendricks at the time. Kimbrel went to the eighth inning and basically went from a 1.4 ERA type guy to, I think, somewhere around six. So that's where Helsley's at. Mullins, kind of the reason why I wasn't necessarily crazy about getting him in the first place. I'm just glad they really didn't give up a ton to get him. Really hasn't shown up. He's starting to. I think he the last couple of games he's been hitting a little bit. So hopefully that's a sign to come. But I'm not really taking too much into that because I see the bigger picture of things, and I see why, at least now. Especially with the young kids that came up and the way they've developed. I mean, none of these guys were first-round picks, McLean, Tong, or Sproat. They were all developed. So that's a huge thing for me. I love seeing that. I think – I forget which one it is, but one of them I think was drafted as late as like 5th or 6th round even 7. And look at where they are, you know. So as far as the development of this potential young core of pitching that they have, and then everybody seems to forget that Christian Scott exists. He had Tommy John, you know, he missed all of this year. He's going to be back next year. So you're talking 4 young, huge pieces in a rotation where, you know, everyone's like, oh, they need to go get an ace. There's a potential they have 3 of them that they developed on their own. So this is what the plan was. The Frankie Montas injury, not that I ever wish injury on anyone. That issue seemed to have resolved itself. Again, it's a horrible way to put it, but it just is reality because what were we really going to do with him? And I'm glad this is where this is going to end up. And I did want to touch on this. They're going to go into next season, assuming Kodai Senga doesn't opt out, which doesn't make any sense to me with the way he's pitching in AAA right now. So he's not opting out. Going into the final year of his deal, I think David Peterson also going into the final year of his deal. You got Clay Holmes for the next 2. You got the 4 guys I just mentioned, and you got Sean Manaea. You have 8 starters, legitimate starting pitchers for 5 slots, unless they go 6-man.
That's true.
So why didn't you guys sign an ace? And Michael K the other day, I made a video about him earlier today. Why didn't they even call Max Fried?
But in defense, I'm not trying to be Yankee boy, but in defense, it's just a phone call. That's all he was saying was a phone call just to see
that they weren't interested.
But the fact that they were willing to give Manaea $25 million a year, which, and rightfully so, because he pitched good for them years. But what happens if the Mets would have gave a little bit more money and they would have offered 6 years? You wouldn't give a guy at 30 years old a 6 year deal?
They
weren't
getting Max Fried for six.
I know, but just to even ask the question, they didn't even go down. They didn't even go down that road of even asking.
So he's checked off a lot of boxes that would deter the Mets from even going in that realm of possibility. And the reality is, their philosophy with this organization. And again, we could do a whole special on this. I would love to do an episode.
They could have upped the AAV on him and gave him less years, and maybe he would have did that. Like, hey, the Yankees overdrew 27. We'll give you 33 for 2 years less. And maybe he's like, you know what? I'll take that.
So, but all right. So what I want to like kind of get into, though, and like get back to is like the philosophy with the Mets when it came to this starting rotation thing and the boxes that Fried checked off that probably just said, we're not even going to go down that road. And their philosophy is they don't want to give out long-term deals to pitchers 30 and above. And at first, you know what? I'm not going to go there yet. The boxes with that is Fried fit that criteria, long-term deal over 30. Also has had some arm trouble and some injury history. That's another turning point for them to say, all right, yeah, no, we're good. Like but who's to say they didn't check in? I guess they didn't. I don't know. I don't know. Does Michael Kay know all the answers about every issue with a free agent? Like, does he really know that Stearns didn't even call up Fried's people and have a conversation?
Maybe when he became a Yankee, he found out more dealing with Max and maybe his agent. I'm not sure.
Maybe. I think it's a stretch because, like, again, my issue with, like, the statements he made about that is the fact that, again, the Mets' philosophy is they don't – like David Stearns and the organization, they don't want to go down that road. So when you say, like, you're not even going to call a guy like Max Fried, no, he doesn't fit the criteria of the philosophy they want to do. Now, I guess maybe somebody to a different degree, like a Skubal when he's going to be available. If every team should be calling him, like every team. But that's, you know, that's neither here nor there.
But that's what I was asking you. Would David Stearns draw a line in the sand for a certain guy?
I think so.
Because do you think it's going to be 8 years like Fried, or is it going to be 10?
I don't think he'll ever give out a 10-year deal to a pitcher. I really don't.
At 30, maybe at 26, he would.
Yeah, that's totally different. You're getting years.
Not at 30. He's literally 30 years old, which would take him into his age 40 season. Yeah. But I'm saying, would he offer him 7 years, 8 years? Do you think Stearns would do something like that?
We'll see how that tends to play out. But
because wouldn't you feel more comfortable with a guy like a Skubal? Imagine you had Skubal, McLean, Sprout, and Tong.
Oh, that's potentially disgusting. You know, disgusting. I don't want to. I'm not sitting here saying that these kids are going to completely pan out, but listen, it looks good right now in a small sample size.
Yeah, and I'm saying if you had a legit ace like that with those three kids that have proven they know how to pitch, they look decent. You know,
McLean's got it. Like,
Tong has looked pretty good. He struggled one start, but he's looked good for the most part. He looked good earlier today. I mean, that's a – and then you got Manaea and Senga. I mean, you could have Senga as your number five.
Well, no, Senga would be he'd be out of the equation at that point because he Skubal's a free agent after next year. Senga's deal will be done, and
if you're going to go sign
Skubal and have you have Christian Scott. Do they bring back David Peterson? I mean,
that would be wild.
It really would be. I don't know. And you know what? Listen, here's the thing though, if McLean, Tong, and Sproat come out to be what is expected at this point. I mean, McLean looks like a bona fide ace at this point right now with what he's been doing. Tong looks like he still needs maybe a little work. And Sproat's look solid. Again, everything's been a very small sample size. But if these guys are a legitimate 1-2-3 punch, and then you got Christian Scott, who when he was up did not look bad. It's not like he was like No, he looked good. So now you're talking about four young guys that are going to anchor a rotation. I mean, I know we did this about 10 years ago, but are we reliving and could it be a potential better tandem of the Harvey, DeGrom, Matt, Syndergaard days, you know, and Wheeler, you know, Wheeler went to Philly. But, you know, I mean, could that be now a revitalized version? And they still have a couple other guys that are coming through. I know there's one. I'm sorry. I hate to do this to you guys. I hate to bring something up and then not know the kid's name. But they have another guy in the system. He seems to be more of a reliever, a fireballer. And who's to say there's another Tong in? Because were we talking about him last year? No. Really weren't.
Right.
We're talking about Sproat. McLean was like kind of a throw-in. Tidwell was like kind of a throw-in. Outside of that, I don't really remember talking about Jonah Tong last year. So the way that they're developing the young talent, who's to say and who knows what they're going to be able to develop? That only time will tell. But, you know, back to the point of the whole Fried thing and why I had like kind of such an issue that I actually made a video about Michael Kay. It was just like, dude, a little bit of research, man. Like, you're in this city. You live here. You cover the Yankees. You talk about the Mets negatively all the time. You know this team. You know, it's not like you don't. So how are you going to sit here and say, well, how did he not call Max Fried? Do you pay attention? If you're going to throw shade at the Mets, totally fine. But do it right. And if you can't, why are you just going to drop a ridiculous, I don't want to say ridiculous, but sort of, because it's right in front of you. You know, it's not like this is a team out west or, you know, a team in the Midwest that you're not really covering and then, like, you don't really know because you don't know the ins and outs. Totally understandable. But when it's in the same city and it's a rivalry, like, dude, you should know that. I'm sorry.
I think he asked the question not, you know, because he's not knowing of how they're going about the, you know, the age 30 and above. And
how do you not know that?
But even if he does, it's, to me, it's still a viable question. Because the question from then on out with the Mets was the starting rotation.
Yeah, but my thing is, I didn't want to answer that. We're giving out a potential, what I would see, a contract that's not going to age well. I don't think Max Fried's contract is going to age well. So I beg to differ.
He's had one arm injury in 2014. He hasn't had anything since. His only struggle has been blisters and a hamstring injury since then. He's made 30-plus starts in 4 years, and he's had the best ERA since 2018.
But most of these contracts don't age well, and that's why I think we should do a short about this. I'll be honest with you.
No, you're 100% right. I think if we can get a good 5 years out of him, it's a win for the Yankees. If his decline comes in the age 36, 37, 38 season, I'm okay with that. If he gives me 5 solid seasons and 3 mediocre ones, I'm cool with that.
Depending on how it plays out.
Yeah, for all in the $30 million. You know, I'm not expecting him to win 19 games every year, but if he's going to win me 14, 15 and give me a mid-3 ERA the last 3 years, hey, listen, we won that whole thing.
And now you're looking at a scenario where, yeah, they did Simon Aya, they have Peterson, they have this, and now you have, like I said, 4 starters and the young kids. I get it. It is Max Fried. Totally fine for right now. But now you're going to set yourself up where you have these young pitchers. Now you're forced to trade one. Maybe that's not the move they want to do. They want to develop these guys and see how it plays out. I'm liking what I'm seeing so far. So I'm not really, you know, it's just like there was no reason to put all your chips in year one of getting Soto. There was no reason for it. And I think in the past, Steve Cohen especially has learned making that move could backfire and it could get ugly. Verlander, Scherzer, when it was in response to DeGrom leaving.
And he also said they were going to win in 5 years too.
Yeah, listen, that's an expectation. If I had his kind of money, I would say the same thing. I'd probably say 2.
Then you should have put all your chips in, no?
But okay. So let me try to put this in perspective. I could either put all my chips in to try to win this year to fulfill a promise I made to boost my ego, or I could build a sustainable winner or potential winner or somebody that's going to be.
No, he's always going to do that.
But doing it smart. And he learned the lesson the hard way by doing what he did with Verlander and Scherzer. So instead of, like I said, you know, flattering his ego by putting all his chips in for now and potentially screwing himself for the future. Instead, he's developing a farm system. He's developing young talent and pitching and everything else that he has. I don't necessarily hate this way, because putting everything into the first year of Soto to me isn't really the answer, because how is everything else going to play out in the long run? Building what the Dodgers, the model that the Dodgers have, that they have potentially the number one farm system in baseball just about every year and just about the number one team in baseball every year, that's the end goal. You're not going to do that if you're now, all right, now I put all my chips here into two big monster signings. Now I'm forced to trade this young talent, and look how some of that worked out. Look at Helsley has not, you know, and this is just trade deadline pieces, but now you just, they haven't had the sustainable, like, young talent in a long time. They haven't had a farm system like this in a long time, and they have the means of the money that they're going to spend in going right to get Lindors and Sotos and Alonzos and all that. So that's what I mean. And I don't really care about, you know, his promise to win in 5 years. That really doesn't bother me. It was just, honestly, I was just more excited that the Wilpons were gone. He could have said, we're going to win the World Series this year, and failed miserably. And I still would have been happy because the Wilpons were gone. I don't really care. I just wanted them out. But seeing what he's done as an owner and the last 5 years completely reverting and turning this franchise into a complete different person almost, you know, it's like the Mets went to rehab and came back and they're like, they found God and all that. And that is what I'm happy for. And I'm happy that this way the team is being built for now and what's ahead of us. So I'm not really all that bent out of shape that, you know, his 5 year promise thing went to crap. I mean, they won 100 games. I've never seen that in my life, you know, with this team. It resulted in a first out and exit. We had a horrible matchup with San Diego that year. The Musgrove with shiny ears. We couldn't hit you. Darvish worth the damn. I mean, it's just sometimes those matchups play up, and it is what it is. That's how it goes. They obviously had the down year when they signed Verlander and Scherzer, and they made the moves to, you know, bolster their farm system. And you know, listen, he wore the egg on his face. He owned that money. He ate most of their money, and he got the returns that he got, and it put them in position even now, you know. And I just think
they're gonna have to figure something out. If they don't make the playoffs, Mike, this year, there's massive problems there.
I wouldn't say massive problems. I disagree with that completely.
Look, in 2023, when the Yankees didn't make the playoffs, that to me was a massive problem.
How is it a massive problem? Your star player went down.
It's a massive problem. He missed 25, 30 games. If the Yankees would have went 500 in those 25, 30 games, they would have made the playoffs. So that's why it was a massive failure, because guys didn't step up. They had enough talent on that team. Gerrit Cole won the Cy Young that year. They had enough people on that team and enough talent to win. Josh Donaldson was brutal. Aaron Hicks was brutal. There was, you know, it was just terrible. We had guys that shouldn't have been on that team. There was guys that should have been on that team that weren't performing. It was terrible. This team, you stole Juan Soto from the Yankees. You go out, your pitching was good. All of a sudden, it goes bad. The offense is hitting. For some reason, the pitching is not there. And you guys don't make the playoffs, and that's acceptable. Juan Soto
didn't say it was acceptable.
No, but I'm just saying Juan Soto is not here to not make the playoffs.
No, I understand.
Especially
that.
In year one. You want to say that the first year is a complete waste? No. This guy hit just as many home runs as he did last year. He's probably going to hit the same amount of RBI again. He's got the most stolen bases he's ever had, and that year is now gone if they don't make the playoffs. That to me is a colossal failure, and Cohen is going to have to go to the drawing board and say, what do we have to do to be better? Because this team was supposed to win 95 games.
They're going to have to improve the offense, honestly. That's really what it's going to
be. I don't think the bullpen 100%. I don't think the offense is the problem.
Well, they're gonna lose a lot of pieces, you know, within that. I mean, Alonso's opting out. We know that. So they're going to have to do something there. Marte's not going to be a part of the equation no more. You're going to have a hole in center field. Now, what is that going to look like? Is Benj come up and be the center fielder for the future next season? Do they go out and get somebody? That remains to be seen. You know, if Alonso walks, what do you do? Is Clifford your guy? Do you sign maybe a Josh Naylor? Do you go and poach Cody Bellinger too? I mean, I don't know. I'm not really too crazy about that long-term wise. You know, there's a lot. To me, they're going to have to fix the holes they're going to have in the offense with, you know, some of the holes that are going to be created in free agency. And they're going to have to completely revamp the bullpen. And, you know, obviously the other side, which I fully expect Edwin Diaz to opt out, you're going to have to lock him up. You're going to have to give him his money. It is what it is. He's one of the best closers in baseball. You know, but let's not go experiment with elsewhere. I think Diaz wants to stay, so there's that. But I wouldn't say that there's a necessarily massive problem because there are answers all around the organization. You know, like I said, like I've said to you in the beginning of the podcast in general, you know, if this happens, there is an answer. You know, there is a guy, there is somebody else, there is a way to go. And there are questions like what exactly are they going to do? But it's not like, all right, if we lose him, we're completely like lost. And, you know, where are we? No, it's like, all right, if Alonso walks, it's probably going to be this kid Clifford. You move Vientos over, Beatty plays third. You have
That's fine. I'm just saying if they don't make the playoffs, though, that's a problem.
It's a huge disappointment, and especially the fact that signing Juan Soto puts that added pressure to do it. Not to mention the fact
their offense has been phenomenal. It's been really good. It's what's keeping them afloat. To be honest with you, it's their pitching. It's their pitching that's been backstabbing them. But what I'm saying is, you can't have a year in the Juan Soto era where you guys missed the playoffs. When in 2023, it was a disappointment to me as a Yankee fan. That to me, the Yankees didn't, because you know what they did? They built a team that they thought was going to be sustainable, which is fine. That's great. Josh Donaldson, that wasn't Cashman's fault. He played like absolute crap.
Okay? No, that was terrible.
He had hit 28 home runs the year before. We were expecting a guy that was going to provide power and play defense. He did the defensive part phenomenal. He couldn't hit to save his life. I don't know what happened there, but it's almost like he was up at bat without a bat. That's how bad he was at points. And that team didn't live up to the expectations, and that disappointed me. It was unacceptable, and I think that if any year in the 15 years that you guys don't make the postseason, it's unacceptable. And does a guy like Carlos Mendoza have to get talked to? Does he get fired? Do they need a new voice? Are they not playing for him? I mean, you guys don't even have 80 wins yet. That's a problem to me. This team should not be looking up at five or six other teams. They should be in the team had,
now, if they had one of the more better rotations in baseball coming into this season, I would totally agree with you. The fact that they basically bridged So here's how I'll break this down. And this is why I said Josh Donaldson to the end. That was horrible. When that first happened, it made no sense to me. Because realistically, the only reason why you guys made that trade was to bridge the gap to Volpe, because you also got IKF in the deal. That was the whole centerpiece of everything. Me, you could have scrapped that altogether, never traded for IKF, never traded for Josh Donaldson, not taking on his money. You could have went and signed Andelton Simmons that offseason, had a monster, one of the best defenders I've almost ever seen play in the last 10 years at the shortstop position for basically dirt cheap and no money. And he would have been what he was offensively. And then you could have utilized that other $25 million that you were given that clown Donaldson for the 2 years that he was in New York.
All he had to do was hit.
He was an aging superstar, and you saw the breakdown with him. He had his moments where he was hitting the home runs and all that, but you saw he was an aging guy he was losing it. And his drop off it came fast. And you saw it happening. So that was my other thing. But that's where now the moves that they made going into this year with the starting rotation was to bridge the gap to the young guys. So they got their IKFs and the Griffin Cannings and the, you know, having the 2 years left of David Peterson, having the year and a half left of Kodai Senga. Yeah, and they went and experimented with Clay Holmes because, you know what, listen, if these young kids come up and steal a spot from Clay Holmes, then Clay Holmes goes to the bullpen and we call it a day. It is what it is. I don't care that he wants to be a starter. If you have to pick between having McLean or Clay Holmes in your rotation, it's McLean every time as of right now.
Of course, yeah.
Every time. So, if, you know, that it is what it is. So they basically, like I said, they just bridge the gap with their rotation into the young kids. I think they're going to an extent, respond to it. But if you really think about it, now you're going to get these kids. All these guys are getting stretched out this year. And this is what I mean by it's bridging the gap. David Peterson is pitched the most innings he's ever had in his career. And you're talking the last time he even came something close to this was in the minor leagues. Right. Senga was hurt all of last season. He's in AAA. He's trying to figure himself out. There's that. Manaea was obviously hurt. He had a resurgence last year. It was what it was. That really hasn't seemed to work out now. Griffin Canning was a one-year deal. You could wash that. Frankie Montas turned out to be a three-week deal. You could wash that at this point. You know, so as far as that goes, that's what they were doing. They were just bridging the gap at their rotation to their young guys. So it's that that was the plan. And now maybe I didn't essentially see it all along, but I did know they had Sproat and I knew about McLean. Tong was like, I knew about him, but I didn't know that he was going to progress as much as he did in this calendar year. I really did not. But now what they've done, and now David Peterson could be a viable option to get an extension. You're looking at a situation where they're stretching out their starting pitching to places they've never been before. Some of these guys, Clay Holmes, David Peterson, like I've mentioned, now you bridge the gap, and now you have this three-headed monster in Tong, McLean, and Sproat going into next season that these guys, with the talent that they have and the potential that it's looking like, I mean, you're potentially looking at three aces, one, two, and three in your rotation. So I'm not necessarily like it's disappointing if they don't make it, but I see the writing on the wall is what I'm basically trying to explain. I'm not going to jump off a cliff if they don't make it. I'm just going to be very disappointed because I want them to make it every year, of course. But I don't call it a massive failure, if you will, because like I said, there is white writing on the wall, at least in my opinion. I could be wrong. So you could combat me. We could still do this all day. And I want to hear the comments. I want to hear everybody tell me I'm a Mets apologist. Let's go.
I personally think you're crazy for that. You're crazy. You're right. You have all the pieces, but to not make the playoffs would be a disaster. I'm sorry. It's unacceptable. And to me, Steve Cohen, the day they don't make the playoffs, should go on the podium and say, this is a disgusting disaster, and it's never going to happen again. I'm bleeding money out of my pockets to make sure this team is winning, and we didn't win. Met fans across the world, not only New York, this will never happen again. Sorry.
Let me ask you something.
That has to be done.
In 2023, when you had your massive failure.
Cashman
is not the owner.
Cashman and Steinbrenner were both there and said, we're going to do whatever we have to do to get back to the World Series. You know what they did? They went out and got Juan Soto. That was the missing piece. That you didn't need to do anything else. They got back to the World Series. They didn't win it, but they said three easy words. They said, we're not done. We're going to go out and we're going to go get the pieces we need. They shored up the bullpen a little bit and they got Soto. That was their big piece. They traded for Jazz later on. That was their little move in the middle of the season. And that was it. That was it. I think Cohen is going to have to go up there and either go up there with Stearns, and they're going to have to apologize to the fans and say, we're charging way too good money for you guys to come into this ballpark to witness that season. And we're sorry. It's never going to happen again. And that, you know what? That would fuel Met fans to say, you know what? We have an owner that cares. Because everybody says, oh, you know, Hal just sits back and he you know, Hal was pissed. Hal is not bleeding money the way Cohen is to not make the playoffs.
Yeah, I get that.
It's unacceptable.
But Cohen has addressed the Mets fans, and he's done
100%. And I know he would. And I'm just saying, I think if they didn't make the playoffs, he would have to go up there and say, "This is never going to happen again." As long as I'm alive owning this team, I will not let this happen again. Because
I don't think it's gonna. And I do think they're gonna get in.
No, me too. I actually do think they wind up getting in. I don't think Cincy and San Francisco have enough. It doesn't matter. I think the Mets, they go 500 the rest of the way, they get in. So. To me, it's whatever, but that's just my opinion. But it could happen where they don't get in. There's only a two-game lead, right? It's a two-game lead. Anything could happen.
Of course.
What I'm saying is if that happens, Cohen is going to have to tell Met fans, this won't ever happen again as long as I'm living and I own this team. Because the common Met fan that watches this team every day is not going to be happy that they didn't miss the postseason.
Yeah.
You're giving $50 million to Juan Soto.
Right.
You did everything. You got the pitching. You thought you had, you called up all the three guys that you're developing that had done good. But for some reason, there's a disconnect with this team right now.
Well, no, they're the thing that's kind of holding everything together at this point. And that's what shouldn't be. Like these guys, essentially, I guess they're expanding. I mean, we spoke about this again when the podcast started. And I was basically telling you how much depth they had at the starting rotation. And all of it essentially went to shit. I mean, Montas pitched 3 weeks. Manaea missed half the season. Griffin Canning pitched
2.5 months.
Right.
It's not
your guys' fault.
Kodai Senga acted like his ghost forkball and turned into an actual ghost. A lot of things essentially went wrong, and that I don't necessarily put blame on. I mean, who's going to see Griffin Canning blowing out his Achilles?
No. I'm not blaming management for that. That's called an unfortunate event.
Right. And they've had major unfortunate events happen to this rotation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What I'm saying is they still, with all that happening, were a good enough team to be in the postseason. And if they don't make it, but if they don't make it, it's just going to be, to me, someone's got some explaining to do. That's all I'm saying.
No, we had to put ourselves in the position because they had to make this harder than what it is, because this is what the Mets do. They have to go to LA and play a 3-game series there, and hopefully they come out on top. And that would be a stellar start to the postseason into the world champ, you know, the defending champions home and knock them out in the first round. Do I think that's really realistic?
Yes,
but the Dodgers don't look that strong. I hate to admit this. The strongest team in all of baseball right now,
is Milwaukee.
No, I actually think it's Philly. Milwaukee is right there, but the way Philly's been playing lately, my God.
Yeah, they have a good offense, and
they really
pitching,
do.
And when their pitching is there, that's a good point.
And they don't even have Zach Wheeler right now.
I know.
That's the crazy thing. Right now, they're the scariest. And it's no disrespect to the Brewers. I love that team, and I love that scrappiness and the way they're handling business. But there's just something about Philly that's just not sitting right, and they look too damn good right now. And hopefully they're just getting all these wins out of their system before the playoffs, and they'll Philly themselves.
I know. I just went on like my little Met rant or whatever. I mean, I wasn't so negative, but I will say that I think they could beat the Dodgers.
I think it is possible because, like I said, nobody's really like, wow. And this is all across baseball. I don't really remember a season where it was like, there's really not a team. Like, everybody in the mix, if you told me any combination of them made it to the World Series, I necessarily wouldn't be surprised. Because there's no clear cut, like, wow, look at that team. Like, there's a couple of teams that look stronger than others, fine. Like, not everybody's the same. But there's no, like, major front runner running away with this.
No.
Listen, this is interesting. I mean, is there a possibility, I got to look, that we might not even get a 100-game winner this year? I think it's possible.
Yeah, the Brewers have 94 wins, I believe.
They're 94 already? All right, so
they would have to win 6 of the next 9. They have to go 6-3 in order to get.
Which I would assume they should. Wow, the Brewers, 100 games. That's crazy. Never would have saw that coming.
Nope.
Hit some uncharted territories. Look, realistically, I mean, we're ending the season already. I know throughout the summer we've had a lot going on. It's the summer. We do a lot of things with our family. We've mentioned time. We've both gotten sick at different times. There's been a lot of issues with trying to get these episodes out. We have a lot of stuff planned for the end of the season. We're going to recap a lot of stuff. So you're going to see a lot of shorts, I think, coming forward. Just mentioned a little while ago that I would like to do a short breaking down the philosophy of the Mets and really the long-term deal for the pitcher over the age of 30. I really thought it was a crazy thought, and then I really dug and really went into this, and I looked at all the guys that are signed now, and I looked at a lot of guys over the last basically 25 years. And you can almost count on one hand, like, yeah, maybe there was some individual success. There was no real, like, he was the same person he was when he was in his late 20s and whatever the case. And there was no real, like, you went and signed that pitcher and ended up getting a World Series out of it. There's really only a couple. And there's a lot to break down with that. It's not just as simple as I'm putting it, but that's something I would like to do. Like I said, we have a lot of shorts and a lot of ideas that we're going to be pushing that way. So this, maybe we went a little extra with this episode because we might not do a long episode like this until maybe the playoffs are essentially over. Cause you know, it's going to be tough to do these hour and a half long episodes when, you know, we have a lot of still baseball content to cover. So I think
that's
kind of part of the plan.
And who are we kidding? When we do shorts, they're 45 minutes long. So who are we
kidding? Yeah, at most. So really, yeah. I mean, our shorts, the idea is to get them done in 25 to 30 minutes. And realistically, we do what we just did now, and we're 45 minutes deep. Exactly. And then we have to kind of like wave at each other on the camera, like, hey, stop talking, you know? So yeah, pretty much. Before we go, as usual, listen, guys, light up the comments. If you're still here, I hope you are. I know this was an extended episode. Everything that we kind of catapulted into this whole episode of craziness, I love it. You know, we went off the rails a little bit, usually calm. We were very laid back for it, but, so hit us up with your favorite part. Hit us up with some of the outlandish things that you and I have said, mainly probably me, because I come out with the outlandish. I love it. It's fun. Let's think outside the box and go crazy. But outside of that, the part that you're going to hate the most and hate us the most for is this trivia question. And I promise you, unless you know the answer, you are going to despise us as people. It's really the only thing. When I saw this question, I was hysterical laughing. I brought it to you. You were completely stumped. And then when I told you the answer, you wanted to jump across the table. Yeah, so
this was ridiculous.
So again, unless you know this answer off rip, I don't really see it. So here it is. What pair of brothers have hit the most home runs in Major League history?
Oh, God.
I'm not going to say anything else. I don't think I have to.
Just repeat it one more time.
What pair of brothers have hit the most home runs in Major League Baseball history?
This is like some Bonham and Bailey type question. It's like a circus question.
God, you're gonna hate us so much, and I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to the hate.
I have nothing else to add other than Steve Cohen owes the Met fans an apology if they don't make the playoffs. That's all I'm saying. I think season ticket holders, not ones that steal a star player from another franchise, and that hasn't won in 40 years, that's been talking about winning, and then all this stuff happens. So you got to send letters, written letters, with like a gold seal to the season ticket holders, and then do a press conference for all the other fans. That's what I think has to happen. You're sitting there saying it's not that big of a deal. It's a big deal.
No, I'm going to be disappointed, like I said, but to say that it's like,
just stop it. Just stop it. It's
don't use mine against me.
Maybe it's because it's a little late. Maybe you're a little delusional. We're going to fix this.
I see the writing on the wall.
If I asked you to come over to watch playoff baseball and the Mets aren't in it, you're going to be like, yeah, this is disgusting.
Maybe it's because I'm confident that they're going to be there.
I said too. I said I think they will make it. But yeah, all right. So what pair?
So you hate us. What pair of brothers have hit the most home runs in Major League Baseball history?
Please throw the same page there.
Yeah. Look, guys, as usual, it's been a hell of a season. It's not over yet. We got some games left, about roughly 8, 9, 10, depending on who you're rooting for. We appreciate all the support that we've gotten. We've grown pretty well in just a season. We've seen the viewership go up, and we've seen the fact that you guys are staying on the episodes. So we got a little more comfortable and went a little more nuts, and we're here a little longer this time. And that's because of you. So I just want to, give you guys your shout out, your comments. You guys have been doing what we ask. You light up the comment section. You guys, the listens have been phenomenal. We really do appreciate you. And as always, thanks for hanging out.
This is the Diamond Discussions Podcast.